Okay, first, thanks very much to Oscar for inviting me to speak here today. I'm going to talk about some of my research looking at climate change and drought over the 21st century. And from this talk, I'm going to draw heavily from a paper that we published in Science Advances in February of this year, in which we concluded that for Western North America, or much of Western North America, we can expect future drought risk and severity to exceed even probably the driest two centuries of the last 1,000 years. This kind of led to some rather kind of colorful headlines, but really what I want to talk about today is the physical reasoning behind our rather what some thought were maybe two extreme conclusions. Before we talk about that, I think it's worthwhile talking about what we mean when we talk about drought. At a very basic level, a drought is simply defined as a moisture deficit, but within that are some very specific definitions that, depending on which one you use, changes both our expectations for how drought will change with climate change and the underlying physical processes that are important. So most of us probably think about drought in terms of the what we might call the supply side of the equation. Okay, so a lack of precipitation, a lack of rainfall, a lack of snowfall. All right, but that's just one very specific type of drought called a meteorological drought. Okay. At the end of the day, we only really care about droughts when they have big impacts, and they only really have big impacts when we see things like soil moisture deficits that are large enough to negatively impact ecosystem productivity or agriculture or wildfires, or when the levels in our lakes and our rivers and our surface reservoirs from which we withdraw much of our water resources begin to decline sharply and inhibit our ability to take water from those resources. And these are typically referred to as agricultural and hydrological droughts, respectively. And these are the kind of droughts I'm going to talk about today, particularly soil moisture or agricultural type droughts. Because what I'm going to show today is that when we look to the future, what we're really looking at is, yes, some drying from changes in precipitation, but a lot of drying on the long term happening because it's just getting a lot warmer. So I'm mostly a computer modeler. One of the things I do is analyze all these different computer simulations that different groups have run for the future to look at how, if we continue our greenhouse gas emissions on the current course, what our climate system might look like. And so this is one result from a whole ensemble of models, about 24 models here, looking at the changes in precipitation for December, January, February, and June, July, August. The areas in blue are areas that are going to get wetter, so less meteorological drought, and the areas in brown are the areas that are expected to get drier. So you see it's kind of a heterogeneous response, but there's a couple features that the models all tend to agree on. One is that areas that are already pretty wet, so the high latitudes that already get a lot of rain and snow, and the deep tropics, especially over the oceans, are very likely to get even wetter, even more precipitation. Whereas areas that are semi-arid to arid, so the desert southwest, the Mediterranean, southern Africa, areas that don't get very much precipitation, are likely to get even less in the future. And this is a fairly robust model result that we see in these simulations, and it's typically referred to as the rich get richer and the rich get richer and the poor get poorer type mechanism. Now, what happens if we look at soil moisture in these models? Well, we see something very interesting, which is that the major regions of soil moisture drying are much expanded compared to the regions where we see these declines in precipitation. So, for example, over North America, most of the precipitation declines are in the southwest and Mexico, but if we look at the soil moisture, we see the soil moisture is reduced over pretty much all of Western North America. Similarly, in Europe, most of the precipitation reductions happen in Southern Europe and the Mediterranean, but then we look at soil moisture and we see that pretty much the entirety of the continent dries out. So this means that precipitation alone cannot tell us everything that's happening with the soil moisture in these projections. So we need to look to some other mechanism or some other physics. And what we can look at for an explanation for this is pretty simple, basically temperature. So the models, one of the most robust results from the models is the temperature response. Pretty much every model predicts that with increased greenhouse gas emissions, it's going to get warmer pretty much everywhere in pretty much every season. Land, ocean, all latitudes. Rates of warming aren't always the same for these different areas, but it is going to get warmer pretty much everywhere. And this warming is really important from a land surface hydrology perspective, because if we increase temperature in the atmosphere, we increase the water holding capacity of the atmosphere, and we increase the vapor pressure deficit, which is the difference between that water holding capacity and the actual amount of humidity or moisture in the atmosphere. And if we increase the vapor pressure deficit, we increase the evaporative demand of the atmosphere on the surface. The atmosphere wants to suck more water out of the surface than it did before when it was much, much cooler. And this is important for those of us interested in water resources and drought, because if warming means greater evaporative demand, it ultimately means more of this, more evaporation, more transpiration, and less of the stuff that we use or ecosystems use. It means less snow. It means more snow melt happening earlier. It means less soil moisture because evaporation is higher. And it means less runoff because, again, more of that moisture is going up through the plants and back into the atmosphere. And so the real lesson from the talk today is that when we start to look into drought in the future, we can't just look at precipitation. We really need to look at these long-term temperature changes that are also included in these projections that are driving much of the drying in the soil moisture in these models. We can calculate various kind of indices to look at this in a little bit more detail. All right, so one such drought index that I use a lot is called the Palmer Drought Severity Index, which is a very simple kind of soil moisture accounting. And so what we can do is we can take output from these models and we can calculate a Palmer Drought Severity Index. And as I'll show later, we can then compare that to a PDSI or Palmer Drought Severity Index calculated for observations. In the top here is what happens if we calculate the change in the PDSI for the end of the 21st century from these models using only changes in precipitation. So assuming that temperatures are not going to warm. You know, it's just a thought exercise. And what we see, unsurprisingly, is that we get a picture of soil moisture, a picture of this drought index that looks a lot like those precipitation maps I showed previously. All right. For example, in the western United States, the real strong drying is confined to Mexico in the southwest. In Europe, it's mostly in the Mediterranean. But then when we recalculate this index, accounting for the changes in temperature, accounting for the increases in evaporative demand, we get a picture that looks like this. We get not only more severe drying happening in these areas that are already drying from precipitation reductions, but we're also seeing an expansion of the area that we're seeing significant drying happening. And so, for example, over North America, the drying here, the soil moisture drying here, then intensifies and expands to cover pretty much all of Western North America. And we see a similar thing happening in other regions as well. We can kind of zoom in and take a little bit more detailed look at this. So here I'm just looking at every single one of the models in that kind of model average I showed in the previous figure. And here we're looking over averaged over the Central Plains. What happens if we only look at precipitation changes? And what happens if we look at precipitation plus temperature and plus increased evaporative demand? And here's a really interesting area, I think, because here we go from a situation where soil moisture actually increases if we only look at precipitation changes to a situation where now pretty much every model agrees that it's getting much, much drier in the future. So a complete reversal of sign. Okay, we can look at Southeast China and see a similar type result, all right, where the models don't really agree on the precipitation changes, so the kind of average drought projection would be about zero, all right, if we only looked at precipitation changes. But then when we add in that temperature effect, we get pretty much drying in almost every single one of these models, and really quite significant. And then we can look at Europe and the Mediterranean, where we see some drying from precipitation reductions of the Mediterranean, but then again this big amplifying effect happening thanks to temperature and increased evaporative demand. The temperature effect is so strong that it basically triples the area that in these projections dries out significantly, which we defined as simply an average soil moisture level that's less than one standard deviation drier than the or greater, more than one standard deviation drier than the 20th century. And so this temperature effect is not subtle. All right. Now, in addition to looking at just kind of the dynamics of droughts in the future, our group also is really interested in understanding how bad these droughts are going to be compared to droughts in the past. Okay, not only droughts over the historical period of the last 100 to 200 years, but also droughts going back maybe 1,000 years in areas where we can actually reconstruct this drought variability using long-lived tree ring records. So this is one example of a reconstruction of the Palmer Drought Severity Index for the southwestern United States. And as many are probably familiar here, in the 1950s there was a very severe, one of the worst droughts on record in the southwest and the southern plains. But we find if we look in the tree ring record and go back 1,000 years, all right, we see epochs or periods of time with much more persistent droughts that really make the 1950s drought look like, you know, almost nothing. All right, and these are the so-called mega droughts, these multi-decadal droughts that have a defining feature of being more persistent, lasting 30, 40, sometimes 50 years, more persistent than really any droughts that anyone has experienced in the history of the United States. And so in a follow-up study, what we wanted to do was to ask, well, in the future drying that we might see in this region and also in the Central Plains, as you'll see, how does that compare to this drought variability and even the driest two centuries in the 1100s and the 1200s? So in this case, we again calculated the Palmer Drought Severity Index from this ensemble of models, but we also looked at soil moisture in the models itself. All right, so now we have three different indices of soil moisture. In this case, I've scaled them all to the same kind of baseline and variability, so they're all directly comparable. And there's differences as you might expect. This index is an approximation of soil moisture, whereas these are calculated directly from what the model is doing. And then you have a 30 centimeter, which is kind of near surface, more faster response time versus deep soil moisture. But at the end of the day, they're all telling us roughly the same thing with some modest but maybe interesting differences. You know, basically, with warming and with reductions of precipitation in some of these regions, we can expect to see reduced soil moisture at the end of the 21st century with warming. What does that look like in the long-term context? Something like this. So these are the kind of what the models are doing. Each color is one of these different drought indices. All right, and this is just kind of a smoothed version of those of that triggering reconstructed PDSI going back over the Central Plains and Southwest over the last 1,000 years. And you know, you can see these kind of driest two centuries right here. This is just a qualitative comparison, but if we then take all these models and we pool them together and we calculate soil moisture distributions from both the tree rings for the last 1,000 or for the driest centuries, from the models over the historical period and from the models over the future, we get a picture that looks like this. Okay, so not only are the models themselves going to be getting drier over these regions, so the blue line right here represents the soil moisture distribution from the models for the historical period, 1850 to 2005. The red is what the models are doing at the latter half of the 21st century under warming. And then the shaded area in the background there are the what the drought distributions, soil moisture distributions look like from the tree rings for the driest two centuries in the record. And so what you can see is that warming and climate change is going to lead to not only drier conditions compared to the historical period that we're all used to, but very likely drier than even the driest two centuries of the last 1,000 years. So a real fundamental shift in the underlying climate dynamics in this region, again, driven primarily by this long-term warming and increase in evaporative demand. This translates to a major increase of in the likelihood or risk of us experiencing what we might call a mega drought, a 35-year drought or longer. All right, and that's these calculations here. So over the historical period in the models, as one might expect, there's only about a 10 to 15% chance of a mega drought. And, you know, this is kind of consistent with our understanding and syncs up well with our observations because over this period we have not experienced a mega drought. But then if we can run the same kind of calculations, this is just a simple Monte Carlo resampling, and we look to the future, the latter half of the 21st century, the likelihood of the Central Plains and the Southwest experiencing a 35-year-long drought or longer under current or business-as-usual high warming scenario is in excess of 80%, pretty much however you slice it, no matter what kind of index you look like. Now, it's all well and good to kind of look to the future, what we think might happen, but we can ask ourselves, well, we're already starting to warm right now, and 2015 is very likely to be the warmest year on record. So we can ask ourselves, are we starting to see in the current ongoing droughts in Western North America the same sort of processes, this amplifying effect of temperature happening right now? And I would argue that we are. And I want to offer a couple examples to kind of finish up my talk today. This is the U.S. Drought Monitor, which basically brings together a lot of different kind of drought metrics and drought indices to kind of monitor drought on a weekly basis for Western North America. And right now, the big drought story in the West is what's happening in California and the Pacific Northwest, which are both experiencing rather intense drought conditions. So naively, one might think that, well, if we looked at precipitation for this last winter, the main moisture supply season for the West Coast, we might expect that precipitation was really, really low during this last winter. But it wasn't. You know, it was a bit low in California and Nevada, but if you look at the Pacific Northwest, I mean, precipitation was about average this last winter. And despite that, they're in one of the most severe drought years that they have ever had. But one thing that was not kind of average this last winter was the temperature. Okay, much of the western United States experienced the single warmest winters on record for as long as we've been keeping records, for the last 120 years. And if you looked at a similar map for the last for the summer and this last fall, you see a similar situation where it's just been exceptionally hot in western North America. And this heat has had implications for droughts in these areas. So, for example, one implication it's had that I haven't really discussed so much is the fact that the snowpack was really, really low at the start of this summer. Because most of this precipitation comes in the form of winter storms, a lot of it comes down in a normal year as snowpack, which accumulates over the winter and then kind of melts rapidly in one big pulse in the springtime. And it's this pulse that's really critical for recharging the soils and surface reservoirs like lakes and rivers and streams. It was so warm over this last winter, however, that despite the total precipitation being about normal, especially in the Pacific Northwest, most of it came down as rain rather than snow. And so it ran off very quickly and didn't have a chance to accumulate into that important snowpack reservoir. And then with those higher temperatures, we also saw increased evaporative demand and increased evaporation rates. The end result was, for much of the West, at the end of the winter, snowpack levels of less than 25% of normal. In some cases, completely non-existent by this date in May. And this is a temperature effect. This is what temperature is doing. Again, precipitation was about normal over much of the western United States, especially the Pacific Northwest, but because it was so warm, we had this effect happening. We can also look at California. Much of the state has been experiencing the worst single or worst multi-year drought years on record, going back again to about 1895, since we really started keeping these observations. And that's what's shown right here. So here's the drought rank for 2014, and here it is for the full 3 years. So exceptionally dry. But at the same time, California has also been experiencing a long-term warming trend. A long-term warming trend that is primarily attributable to human-induced greenhouse gas emissions. All right. So one thing that our group wanted to do was, all right, if we kind of remove that warming trend, what does the drought look like? In other words, how much of the drying in the current California drought could we attribute to long-term warming and long-term increases in evaporative demand and vapor pressure deficit? So we generated a few different kind of estimates of the long-term warming trend in California based on different estimates of the linearity of the trends. And what we were able to come up with was different estimates of the long-term drying trends from human changes to the temperatures only over the 20th century. We didn't look at precipitation because precipitation trends over this time period are about neutral for most of California. But at the end of this, what we concluded was that about, on average, about 20% of the drought anomaly in California from 2012 to 2014 could be attributable to these rising temperatures, which are due to human-induced greenhouse gas emissions, right? And this is the exact sort of thing that we predict is probably going to happen for over the course of the 21st century. While not good, it's at least kind of satisfying to start to see the same kind of mechanisms operating even now, and gives us a little bit more confidence in some of our projections. Because at the end of the day, the temperature projections are much more robust and much more confident than the precipitation projections. I want to end on a positive note because, you know, I don't actually think this is going to mean that the Western U.S. is going to turn into some sort of Mad Max-esque hellscape, you know, where agriculture and human life is impossible. And the reason for this is that there's lots of inefficiencies in the ways that we use water, especially in Western North America. What this does mean is that we're probably not going to be able to use water for all the things that we want to use it for as inefficiently as we've been using it over the last 100, 150 years. And I think a really good example is here, a wheat field in Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona in the desert southwest, very close to the Mexican border. And you can see here that it's being flood irrigated. Now, I'm not an agronomist by any stretch of the imagination, but I can't imagine that this is a terribly efficient way to irrigate this field. And, you know, a lot of this water is probably getting lost to the atmosphere instead of going directly to supplying the crops themselves with moisture. So, you know, my job is kind of easy to kind of talk about the large-scale climate dynamics. You know, I freely admit that I'm just kind of setting up a much larger and much more important problem for people who are actually working on the ground and in the field to try to figure out how to deal with these ultimate water resource issues. And with that, I will end, and I will be very happy to take any questions. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Could you speak a little about the temporal distribution
throughout? Yeah, you mean so the you know, how those changes in those probability, those densities of drought distributions change? Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple things that are happening, right? I mean, on average, things are getting drier, so the average of those soil moisture distributions is shifting drier. But really where it's having a big impact is in the tails. And so what you see is that if you look at the tails of those distributions, the kind of most extreme droughts, there you're starting to see big increases in the likelihoods of those rare events occurring. I mean, they're still rare in a sense of, you know, they're less likely than not, but, you know, you see drought events that might be, you know, something like 1 in 100 year events becoming 1 in 50 or 1 in 30 or 1 in 20 years. And then there's also certainly issues with the kind of variance that we haven't really looked at in much detail in these models. You know, whether the year-to-year variability in precipitation and drought might change could also be a kind of important factor for what these drought distributions might look like at the end of the day.
What is the current trend for the Central Plains?
Right, so for the Central Plains, at least in these model projections, particularly in the Southern Plains, it's looking like this temperature-induced drying is going to be the major driver of drought trends, of soil moisture trends over the 21st century. In the Northern Plains, it's a little bit more complicated because there's a lot more wintertime precipitation, and so at least in the deep soil moisture, we actually see increases in soil moisture in the future. But the dry soil, which is responding much more to what's happening in the, or the shallow soil, near surface soil, which is responding much more to summertime climate, is drying out. What ramifications that has for agriculture, I'm not really qualified to say. Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, certainly, you didn't really talk very much about the variability, but in these model projections, these cycles like El Nino and La Nina are still active and ongoing. A couple things are happening. You know, in many of these areas, they're going to be happening in a much drier baseline. So, you know, the ability of an El Nino to lead to drought recovery in the Southwest won't be as strong, and La Nina-induced droughts in the Southwest will be even bigger. But there's also evidence that the frequency of the strongest of those events, the strongest La Niñas and the strongest El Niños, are very likely to get more frequent. So, you know, that's a kind of complicated issue, and that's something we're really working on to try to understand the interaction between this long-term forced response and how natural variability is going to be superimposed on that. Yes?
Something about the distribution of drought throughout the growing season rather than
No, that's a really critical point. Like, the extent to which we care about droughts oftentimes depend upon what time of year they actually occur. And there's been a lot of work that we're just getting into, but that others have done, looking into things like flash droughts, trying to understand how these droughts that maybe manifest very quickly over several weeks, you know, what kind of dynamics are operating there, how predictable they are. But there's still a lot more uncertainty around that, about kind of the things that are happening within a season. So we're starting to get into that, but so far we've looked mostly at the kind of big picture of things. But thanks, it's a very good question. Yeah, the maps that I showed are multi-year averages, so some were for the very end of the 21st century, 2080 to 2099, and some for the whole 50 years. And so the real kind of thing I wanted to communicate there was just the average conditions, the average kind of soil moisture climatology over those years is getting drier. And so, if you look at any kind of individual year, it might be drier or wetter. And even in the future, there's still going to be big floods and really wet years. But at the end of the day, they're going to be happening in a much drier baseline in these areas. And that's going to have some kind of ramifications. So, thank you. Thank you.